In the 16th chapter of John's Gospel, we find these words, "I have said this to you in figures. The hour is coming when I shall no longer speak to you in figures, but tell you plainly of the Father. In that day you will ask in my name, and I do not say to you that I shall pray the Father for you, for the Father himself loves you, because you have loved me, and have believed that I came from the Father. I came from the Father, and have come into the world. Again, I am leaving the world and going to the Father." His disciples said, "Ah, now you're speaking plainly, and not in figures. Now we know that you know all things, and need none to question you. By this we believe that you came from God." Jesus answered them, "Do you now believe? The hour is coming, indeed it has come, when you will be scattered every man to his home, and will leave me alone. Yet I am not alone, for the Father is with me. I have said this to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." We have just finished celebrating the 100th anniversary of the closing of the Civil War. We can read from the diaries of those who were involved and catch a mental glimpse of the circumstances that surrounded this great and bloody conflict. Just recently, we have been reminded of the anxious days in the years immediately after the war. What with the revival of the Ku Klux Klan and the secrets that surrounded the invisible empire. But we can also find many times of anxiety during the past 100 years. We find ourselves in a state of fear this very day, what with the Cold War getting hotter and with the uncertainties mounting up. Many persons are trying to forget the whole thing in loud parties and in quiet cynicism and in a devastating fatalism that is cutting the nerve of creative action. I sincerely hope we all realize we are living in a day of possible peril. We live in a day when values are flimsy and of little significance. We live in a day when millions are looking for a handout and have no intention of working. We also live in a day where people, in many cases, want to work, but there are no jobs available. If we're honest, we may even say we are living a day when we wonder if the church is really relevant in the lives of its people. Sometimes it would be easy for us to say, "O Lord, let it be utterly destroyed. We have done all we can." Neville Shute's book, On the Beach, may well be a prophecy of our destruction by atomic warfare and radiation. And we could go on with this pessimism, and under circumstances which we have mentioned, it is no wonder that we would be tempted to seek some pattern of escape. But then I think of what Jesus said in John 16, verse 33, "In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." Imagine, if you can, Jesus speaking these words so that you and I could hear them. Actually, one cannot study the Bible coupled with the history of Christianity without getting caught up in the feeling that Jesus knew what he was talking about. One gets the feeling that this was no idle boast or brag, but rather the words of God incarnate speaking to the generation of disciples as well as to our own generation. When one looks at the things that we have mentioned, one comes to some conclusions. First of all, the first conclusion is that when the world is at its worst, Christianity is at its best. Early in life, I was introduced to the writings of Joel Chandler Harris and his stories of Uncle Remus. And my favorite characters were Br'er Rabbit and Br'er Fox. And my favorite story was the story of Br'er Rabbit and the Tar Baby. You remember how it goes. Br'er Fox made the Tar Baby to catch Br'er Rabbit. But after Br'er Fox had concocted this thing to catch the rabbit turned out to be smarter than the fox, because the fox was wondering what he could do with Br'er Rabbit, and Br'er Rabbit begged with all his might not to be thrown into the briar patch. And as you know, this is exactly what the fox did, and as Br'er Rabbit ran off, he looked over his shoulder and yelled to the fox, "Bred and born in the briar patch, Br'er Fox. Bred and born in the briar patch." Well, we might say, my friends, that Christianity was bred and born in a briar patch. It started with a cross. It continued in that each apostle, save one, died a martyr's death. The early church knew persecution and wild beast. But in spite of this, John could echo the cry of all those who suffered, that Christ was the light that had come, and the darkness has never been able to put it out. James Russell Lowell expresses this truth when he says, "By the light of burning martyrs, Christ, thy bleeding feet we track, toiling up new Calvary's elbow with the cross that turns not back." When one reads, he notes three things. First of all, each period of expansion in the history of the church has been longer than the recession. And then secondly, always when the situation was most desperate, a new surge of power has come into the church. And thirdly, that new power has always come when a handful of committed persons have dedicated themselves completely to Jesus Christ. And I think the question for you and me is, are we in a recession, or are we on the threshold of a great expansion? A second conclusion one may draw as he reads is that God is at work in this world. It is difficult for history to show direct cause and effect. It is difficult for us to decide whether or not God is working today. I dare say that Christians generations ago couldn't be certain that he was, but as we look at history in retrospect, we believe that this is true. It can only be counted in terms that are personal. How many people have you heard tell of what God has done for them? Maybe you could tonight. I certainly hope this is so. Now multiply these stories by the millions who have gone on or who are now living. What do you think? Is he or is he not a reality in the world? Has he overcome, or is he still in the tomb? Or maybe you want to measure this thing in terms of what the gospel has done in the social and in the political and also the economic. To be sure, many reforms, programs, and movements have been politically oriented and dominated. But my friends, I can't help but feel that behind all them is the driving force of Jesus' words, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." And since you have done it unto the least of these, you have done it unto me. A third conclusion one comes to as he reads is that the church is of God. It is not a man-made institution. To be sure, man has to maintain the earthly church, but the church spiritual is of God. Today, many persons would get into the church and give themselves to it if they were sure it was God's movement. This attitude was prevalent in the first century. Remember in the book of Acts, chapter 5, where Gamaliel declared, "Men of Israel, take care what you do to these men, For if this plan or this undertaking is of men, it will fail. If it is of God, you will not be able to overthrow them. You might even be found opposing God. When we consider the fires through which the church has passed, and still mark the phenomenal growth, there is no other conclusion than that the church is of God. Where do these conclusions lead us then? Well, my friends, it says to me that if we would be a part of this movement of Christ, we must find a new dimension of depth in our dedication. There must be a reaffirmation of our faith as Christ, the Savior and Lord. In the depths of our hearts, we must conclude that Christ is the real hope of the world. And secondly, we must recognize that God is at work in our lives and in our world. There are those who seem to be convinced that the forces of evil are the only forces at work in this world. But we must conceive of ourselves as instruments in God's hand. And then thirdly, we must care. If God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, we too must love the world. We must be so concerned that we might shed a few tears for it. A mother sent her little girl to the grocery one afternoon late, and she was a long time about getting home. And when she finally came, the mother questioned her as to why she was so long. And the little girl said, "I saw Mary, and her doll was broken." And the mother said, You helped her fix it. The little girl said, "No, I helped her cry." Truly we live in a broken world, and we cannot pass it by and do what God would have us do unless we stop and maybe shed a few tears and help fix it up. We must be concerned as he was concerned if we are to win the total victory for him. So let us take heart and let us be of good cheer, because Jesus Christ has overcome the world. And with that promise, the future can be bright.